If we adopt it, then it will then be 80 seats. And it will then be ready for tabling in the National Council of Provinces. So there are three, basically, there are three things that change. We will be doing this morning with regard to the National Minimum Wage. We're going to deliberate. First, we're going to deliberate on the metrics, because it covers the positions of those who made their submissions and their responses. That's one. Two, we will then vote for each of the clauses of the amended bill, but start with the cover page, the papers, and all that. After that, then I will read the report of the committee. And if you agree with the report of the committee, then we adopt. I don't think there's a need to introduce ourselves as the same team that we were last week. There were also apologies of last week of Honorable Lund and Honorable Boshoff. They are here this morning. We have apologies, one from Honorable Tim. The other one is from Honorable Matevula, from the side of the committee. And also we have apology from the Director General of the Department of Employment and Labor. The DG Sifield is leading the delegation of the Department of Employment and Labor. Perhaps if I can just go at the back, if they just can introduce themselves behind you, Beth.
I'm Henry Dambala, I'm coming from PMG.
Yeah. All right. No, I think you're the only one who was not in the last meeting. So everybody has introduced themselves last week. They are parliamentary staff from the department, I think, got. Mr. Sifield with the DDG and Mr. Kalipi with the Chief Director. Yeah. So can we then go to the metrics that has the positions of the submitters and the responses? I will then ask Mr. Michael Prince to take us through the trick.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to you and good morning to the members, colleagues, and guests. Yeah, this is a pre-note. The matrix was developed based on legal issues that was the legal issues that were mentioned in the submissions, and the matrix is simply the legal responses from our office to those issues. There were issues that we felt and that was confirmed last week by the table staff through a practice note that went beyond the subject matter of the bill, of the amendment bill, and those will be pointed out, and I won't necessarily go into detail into them because the NCOP table staff's practice note deals with that efficiently and effectively, I think, Chair. Chair, the first on the column on the left-hand side says general. These were general comments that were made by in the written submissions, and in fact those are the ones that don't really deal with the subject matter of the bill. The first three, in fact, Chair, were made by COSATU, and if memory serves me correct. And those were proposed, that Kosati proposed further amendments, but if memory serves me correct, Kosati conceded last week that those can fall away and that they won't pursue those matters. I stand to be corrected, but that is my recollection. So I won't really go into that unless members really want me to mention points 1, 2, and 3 under general negotiation. And then the only other amendment under comment under Cassatio's submission was that they strongly supported the bill, and that related to clause 1, the bill only considered the third clause. In fact, they asked the committee to proceed with the matter as soon as possible. The second submission, Chair, was from the Western Cape government and from the Ministry of Finance and Economic Opportunities. Chair, the first submission, and I've tried to isolate the legal issues that they've made. I think there were about three main legal issues. It was a relatively lengthy submission, legal-wise, but there were three main issues. They draw a distinction between conduct that constitutes an unfair labor practice and that which they say constitutes a change in the employment conditions of an employee. They go further to say that dispute that relates to these two different types of conduct are resolved by means of different mechanisms in the Labor Relations Act currently. They allege or verse that wages constitutes a benefit to an employee. A unilateral change in the benefit of an employer would therefore constitute an unfair labor practice. A change in the conditions of employment of an employee does not constitute an unfair labor practice as envisaged in the LRA. They're basically saying that it is superfluous to include wages now because wages is already a benefit. I think that the a colleague from the department correctly disputed that issue. There's cases that state that wages is in fact not a benefit. Wages is specifically excluded under the list of what can be considered as benefits or conditions of services. And so the argument from our side is that the National Minimum Wage now, the National Minimum Wage Act has for all intents and purposes extended the definition of unfair labor practice and now include those matters referred to in section 4A of the National Minimum Wage Act. So those matters that were not previously considered as an unfair labor practice in terms of the LRA as now through the National Minimum Wage Amendment Act, through the National Minimum Wage Act, the Principal Act, they have now been included under the definition of an unfair labor practice. The second issue was the issue about retrospectivity. In section 17.4, they said that the retrospectivity in section 17.4 of the Principal Act should have a rational connection to the ends it seeks to achieve. Chair, I think we went into a lengthy debate last week about retrospectivity, weak, strong, and the department, I think, quite eloquently explained why this type of retrospectivity should be allowed, and in fact the courts would allow. And I just simply concur with that, and I again confirm that legislation may be retrospective. There's nothing illegal, unlawful about retrospectivity. And in fact, with respect, the judgment that was referred to by the Western Cape last week, the Pienaar judgment, confirms the very, if you go through the principles laid out in the Pienaar judgment, it confirms the type of retrospectivity that the Act, not this bill, the Act, brought into operation. The only thing, my comment only relates to the amendment bill. The amendment bill, I would submit, has nothing to do with the retrospectivity of 17.4. Nothing. And so the argument that we should deal with the retrospectivity of 17.4, I think, should fall away because of the practice note that was read here last week by the NCB table stop that said that the NCB rules doesn't allow the committee to look beyond the scope of the subject matter of an amendment law. The subject matter of this amendment law, I submit, Chair, was to correct an incorrect cross-reference. And that's it. It doesn't open a portal to the Principal Act. It simply deals with the issues that was covered in the amendment bill. And that is to amend 4.6 and make it 4.8, to correctly reflect the intention of the legislature under the First Parliament. The last point was that according to them, it is not clear that an error has in fact been committed and that Parliament did in fact intend that section 4.8 must be retrospective and not section 4.6. I don't know if that's a legal issue. I don't know how to respond to that except to say that I've sat through this process I didn't sit through the process of the Principal Act. Another colleague did, so I wasn't involved with the amendment of the Principal Act or the amendment with the Principal Act that was brought into operation, that was brought through Parliament. My colleagues from the department were. But having been involved with the Amendment Act and having to amendment bill and having to look at the Principal Act from when it was introduced through the Portfolio Committee in the Fifth Parliament, through the Select Committee in the Fifth Parliament, it is quite clear that the incorrect reference that slipped in was due to human error. It is quite clear that simply the colleagues at the time didn't pick up that the cross reference needed to be changed to 17.4. And I draw the committee's attention there to the document that not only suggested but proves that there was an error. All one needs to do is look at the bill that was introduced by the department that proposed a particular policy. The amendments that were proposed and adopted by the Portfolio Committee, the Select Committee, and the Fifth Parliament made no further amendments. So those were the only amendments that were made. If we compare those two documents and the act that was filed and assented to by the President, it is clear that there was an error. Because the Portfolio Committee, like I said last week, inserted two new clauses above the then 4.6, which means the 4.6 moved down to 4.8. 17, subsection 4 of the then bill referred to 4.6, the old 4.6. So when the committee, the Portfolio Committee, introduced or amended section 4, clause 4, by introducing two further clauses, it failed to do the cross-reference in 17.4 that referred to the old 4.6, which then became 4.8. That is simply what this bill seeks to address. The bill seeks to fix that error that occurred during that time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. As I was indicating there, honourable members, then we so our tenure to deliberate. As you know, that last week the platform was for the stakeholders to make submissions to make an oral presentation of their submissions, but also there were responses. But then those were now consolidated into this matrix document. So it's for the members now to deliberate on the issues, as I was indicating. After that, then we go to the bill, amendment bill. Honorable Mang and Honorable Damu, in that order.
C'est la présentation des correctifs sur le consensus from the presentation of the last week emerged and that effectively the measure correctly pointed out is for all intent and purpose to correct the error that was made, the human error. And therefore, it cannot be correct to try to extend the mandate of the Select Committee to deal with matters that is not before us. The matter before us definitely is to correct the human error, which Lagos correctly pointed out. We're not focusing on the general law of amendment bill, but rather the subject matter of the bill, which is limited to correcting the error in the initial moving number effect. It does not seek to amend any other matter not for us, but rather to correct the human error. And therefore, we need to really support the view that says, let's support this loss of expenditure.
Thank you very much. Honourable Dump.
Thank you for that person. Oh, sorry I was a bit late this morning, but I was delayed in another meeting unavoidably. Chairperson, I think last week we extensively canvassed the issues, and I think we can conclude on the matter today. To reopen it today would in fact not be of any benefit. We extensively canvassed it, and I think we should conclude the matter. Thank you very much. Supporting Member Mwenda. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable, okay, let me go down. Honourable, Monsieur.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. I think Honourable Chairperson, I was covered by Honourable Mina. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson.
Honourable Lord, followed by Honourable Bosso.
Yeah, just, I'll be the spokesperson for Honourable Bosso this time as well. We support it. We can go ahead. Honourable Brata said, has also given his inputs and happy where we are at this stage.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everybody. I'm covered by Honourable Law. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, then we're done with the metrics. We go now to the, I don't know where, Honourable Ablin? Okay, correct. Okay. Now we're going to the bill itself, amended bill. So as I was indicating, then we first deal with the cover page and see if we agree on it. So I'll ask for the mover and the seconder as we go along. So the Republic of South Africa National Minimum Wage Amendment Bill is initiated by the Portfolio Committee on Labour as a committee bill for introduction in the National Assembly. Proposed Section 75 explanatory summary of the bill and prior notice of introduction published in Government Gazette number 42240 of 22nd February 2019. And the English text is the official text of the bill, a Portfolio Committee on Labour. And the number of the bill is B9-2019. Agree?
Yes.
Okay. The next page, I won't go into the general explanatory note, because it just indicates if it is a amendment, the square brackets indicate omission from the committee of those. Then the bill itself is to amend the National Minimum Wage Act 2018 so as to correct a cross-reference and to provide for matters connected therewith. Agreed? It is enacted by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. amendment of Section 17 Act of 2018. 1. Section 17 of the National Minimum Wage Act 2018 is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 4 of the following subsection. 4. Section 4648 takes retrospective effect from 1 May 2017. And okay. The short title, this act is called the National Minimum Wage Amendment Act of 2019. Okay. So I won't go to the memorandum on the object and the national So we've done with the bill. So what we're going to do now, I'm going to read then the committee report and see whether we have from it. So on this one we will do, because the thing is that it's just preempting. Then if there are going to be any changes from the floor, then they will be added. But once we adopt then the report, it will then be 86. So the report of the Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour on National Minimum Wage Amendment Bill B9, 2019, Section 75. Dated 11 February 2020. The Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour, having considered the National Minimum Wage Amendment Bill B9 2019, Section 75, referred to it, reports that it has agreed with the amendment. While the purpose of the bill, the aim of the bill was to correct a technical error by correcting an incorrect record of reference contained in Section 74 of the Principal Act. The process followed by the Select Committee, the National Minimum Wage Amendment Bill B9-2019, Section 75 Bill was revived on the 17th October 2019 to be considered by the Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment, Labour. The Parliamentary Legal Services was invited to brief the committee on 16 July 2019. I just want to explain this part. It was revised in October, but we had already had a briefing on the 16th of July. But then when the issue of the bill having not been revised was raised, and as that you said, we were not going to continue then with the process until the bill was revised. So after it has been revised, then there was no need again to have a briefing, because we already had a briefing on the 16th of July. So we then had to continue with the process of advertising. So I just wanted to clarify that aspect. The committee advertised the bill for 3 weeks using internal and external national newspapers, inviting all interested stakeholders to submit written submissions. The advert indicated that interested stakeholders could make written as well as oral submissions. The committee received 2 submissions from the Western Cape Provincial Department of Finance and Economic Opportunities and the Congress of South African Trade Unions. On the Western Cape Provincial Government, the department contends that the submitted proposed amendment is not merely a technical amendment as indicated in paragraph 1 of the memorandum of object of the bill, but reforms the law. Further, the department is of the opinion that clause 1 of the bill is retroactive. The department further submitted that retrospective laws are not necessarily unconstitutional, whether presented in weak or strong legal sense. In advancing their submission, the department drew reference on the court judgment of Pinar Brothers Pty Ltd versus Commissioner for the South African Revenue Services, case number 8770/2014. According to the department, the court laid certain standards that need to be observed to determine the constitutional validity of retrospective legislation. The department submitted that the retrospective legislation may contravene the rule of the law where it unreasonable or unfairly impairs the ability of those bound by the law to regulate their conduct in accordance therewith. According to the department, the memorandum of objects of the bill does not indicate what the rationale is for the change except to state that it is a technical correction. What is lacking in the memorandum on the object on the bill is an indication of the rationality for retrospectivity, particularly as this relates to unilateral changes to conditions of employment, as well as unilateral changes to wages of an employee in connection with the implementation of the National Minimum Wage Act, where the labor relations already held at 1 May 2017 regards such conduct as an unfair labor practice. In this regard, the department contends that the retroactivity is both unnecessary and superfluous. Furthermore, the National Minimum Wage Act only took effect on 1 January 2019 after action by the President and was not operational by the retroactive date contained in the bill. The department advances that in the absence of rationality being established or capable of being established, as it is clear from the case law, clause 1, is arguably unconstitutional, and the department submitted that clause 1 should be reconsidered. Parliamentary Legal Services responded as follows. The National Minimum Wage Amendment Bill extends the definition of unfair labor practice to now include matters referred to in Section 4A of the Principal Act. Legislation may be retrospective. The penal judgment confirmed that, however, this amendment bill has nothing to do with retrospectivity of Section 17.4 of the Principal Act. The amendment bill merely seeks to correct a cross-referencing error. The passing of the Principal Act with an incorrect cross-reference was due to human error. With regard to COSATU's submission, COSATU supported the amendment, whether it was concerned about the effect of the technical error that it had a potential to expose workers to unfair practices, being cognizant of the NCOP's limited scope to effect changes to Section 75 legislation. COSATU proposed following amendments, namely, that the Department of Employment and Labor and the committee insert clauses as requested by the Council for Conciliation, Mediation and Arbitration to make its judgment binding in relation to the implementation of the national minimum wage, and the judgment should not be appealable in labor court as this has the effect of dragging such matters to the detriment of workers. The NCOP should insert an additional provision into either the National Minimum Wage Act or the Basic Condition of Employment Act, Section 80, stipulating that the CCMA findings are immediately enforceable. COSATU believes that there is a need to strengthen the Basic Condition of Employment Act to ensure protection of actors and performing artists so that these workers may also enjoy basic rights, protection of benefits as workers in other industries. In addition, COSATU further proposed that actors and performers in the creative industry should enjoy the same rights and benefits applying in the Basic Condition of Employment Act, the National Minimum Wage, Unemployment Insurance, and Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Diseases Act. That is the end of the report. Now, can we then adopt the report? Can we have a move on the second?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the report.
Honorable Boson.
Thank you, Chair. I second the proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any contrary view? Not. So the report is adopted. As I was indicating, the honorable members, then it will then be 86. And then those who are we were in the programming committee will censor this part of the NCOP program. Let me also take this opportunity to welcome the Deputy Minister. We done now with the amendment, so as I was indicating, it's going to be ATC, and then we'll table the report in the House, and then once the House is there, is satisfied and adopted, and it will go back to the President for us, because we have not made any amendments that must then go back to the National Assembly. So it's going to go straight now to the President once it is adopted by the House. Let me also take up this opportunity to welcome and thank you for coming, and also thank DDG and the delegation as well from the Department of Employment and Labor. So we'll see each other when we are in the House to adopt the report. And also take this opportunity also to thank the Parliamentary Legal Unit for assisting the committee throughout. And I'd like also to thank the those who made submissions, department from the Western Cape government, within finance and economic opportunities, and the parliamentary staff, Samira Ali, for also assisting the committee, and some of the legal and the roles that have and the OP committees. Thank you very much. We unfortunately have another meeting.
Thanks for coming. It's hard to find
the the next meeting then is on small enterprise finance agency. We have, because we're going to start with the employment and labor, we said we'll meet with them at 11. We thought we'll finish at 11, but we have finished much earlier. So we'll have to take a break now, and then we reconvene at 11.
Just for the point of time, the works have another meeting at 12 o'clock.
What's going to happen will allow you to confirm if there are any corrections or omissions. Page 1. Any spelling that error. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. And the last page, page 6. Can we have a mover in the second? Honorable Lansman, seconded by Honorable Mwema. The next set of minutes is the 11th of February, last Tuesday. Page 1.
Okay, sorry.
Yes, ma'am.
The previous minutes, just questions on the minutes. If you go to page 5, the last bullet point.
And you have given under.
Yeah. Can we just get a response on that, please?
Did you get the response? The response is that they did not respond. Can we suggest that we write back to them? Because I think the matter will raise in another committee as well. That sometimes we take this decision that we should receive written responses. We're not sure whether they respond, but then the secretary do not take lead. So can we make sure that they respond and also saturate those responses to all the members? But also, when we take those decisions, we must bind them to time frames, because this one is open-ended.
Yes.
It doesn't have a time frame. So we can try that to make sure when we decide that they should send us written responses. Before we get to the next set of minutes, are there any other technical matter on this document? I think that was the only one. Okay, yes. On the next set of minutes, page 1, I don't know what is the question mark. What does it mean? It should be T, as his name is Jeremy Goss, so it's T, Apley, not question mark. I don't know what it is, other name, but T, Apley, page 2. Page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, and page 7. Can we have a mover and a second? Honorable Tambo.
Second that, Honourable Moshodi. Thank you very much.
Are there any matters arising from this set of... No? Okay. That's correct. Thank you very much. Can we then break until 11? We'll resume with our meeting at 11. Thank you very much. Chairperson of the Select Committee on Trade, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour. So that is the Select Committee. We have asked the Honourable Members to introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson.
My name is Shabulot and I'm here from the West Bank.
good morning to those that we haven't greeted yet. Sorry for that. Sonia Gossoff, representing Mpumalanga.
Thank you very much. Can we have the Parliamentary staff to
good morning. My name is Nosbiwo Dinozolo. I'm the Committee Secretary.
Good morning. My name is Belen Mishanda, Researcher for the Affiliate Committee. Good morning, everyone. My name is Luke Motishu. I'm the Colleague Advisor for the committee.
My name is Bindiswe Kapazi, Secretary to the Chairperson.
Good morning. I'm Enrico Bazir, and I'm the committee assistant to the committee.
That's it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable members of the committee, and the staff that faculty, Honorable members of the committee. My name is Martin Marosi. I'm the chairperson of the interim board of CIFAN. On my right is the acting CEO, Mr. Stakala Mbolebo. Accompanying me also is Mrs. Shokichi Adibiba, the CFO of CIFAN. For me, it's a maiden engagement with yourselves. We've been up and tried to your counterpart committee.
So you have been protected. It's your maiden. maybe you just introduce the team, and then we then allow the minister to make open remarks. We were only starting now with the introductions. No, actually we will finish much earlier. Then we have to take a break. Perhaps let's allow the minister then to introduce the team, because we have just introduced ourselves and the members of parliament and the member of the committee and the parliamentary staff. So he was actually introducing the team, but then you were also interested in, perhaps this is your part, because he was introducing himself as an interim chairperson and also acting CEO. So you are the best person also to clarify to this committee why interim, because with the document that we have with the board member, even though he does have an acting, Mr. Mulupo has still the acting CEO at the time. Let me take this opportunity, Minister, to welcome you to our committee. As I have just indicated to the members, that when it comes to entities, we expect the chairperson of the board, the CEO, mainly, and also the DDG responsible for entities of department. But when it comes to the department, the annual performance plans and annual report, we expect the ministry, either the minister or the deputy, to be present at the meeting. But when it comes to entity, we appreciate that you're here to accompany your entity. So I will hand over to you your remarks. And then we'll get up to you to then delegate to be taking the report to this committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for welcoming us this morning. And I need to sincerely apologize for the last time. It was a mishap in my own office, and that was the job. But we felt that as we start the new year, we must also atone for our mistakes and to show our utmost respect for the committee. We opted to accompany the select committee. Like I said earlier in the morning before we started, I'll need to be excused just before some so that we can then attend to other matters of parliament. Maybe let me start at the point of the acting. the easier one was the acting CEO first. The acting CEO, we have started a process of appointing a permanent CEO, but midway we had to abandon the process because at cabinet in November there was a decision taken that the entities must be rationalized. In terms of the cabinet decision, CEDA, CIFA and the NEF are being merged together. So we felt there's no point of completing the process of appointing a CEO when you are still going to then do the merger. And we felt that the acting CEO, in consultation with the chairperson, and I hope the chairperson consulted with the board, we felt that the acting CEO, because he's seconded to CIFA from NEF, is the best capable person to take us through that process of the merger, given that he knows the two institutions. And I'm sure the chairperson has been engaging with him to make sure that he's to inform him that he's got our full confidence, but he knows that he's got our full confidence. And so we're not really worried about his acting position. Similarly, last year when we came in, there was a board that whose term was going to end. And in the term of office of the board, we agreed that it's going to end on the 31st of July. On the 31st of July. With that term ending on the 31st of July, the advice was we shouldn't rush to put a full board when we do not know the, for lack of a better word, the animal we are dealing with. We must put an interim structure that will allow us to then get the gist of what's happening and then put the board. The term of office of this board, the interim board, is supposed, and we couldn't go and say that we are putting a board for only a year because it is in the process of advertising and so forth, but we then did a shortened process that goes into the cabinet process. So we then agreed that we will appoint a new board by the 31st of July 2020. But the issue of the rationalization and merger of entities will affect the terms of all the boards that are in place as we rationalize and move forward. Because we know the impact of the lack of a permanent leadership both at the board and management level, we have volunteered ourselves to fast track the process of the merger. But we are aware that CIDA is established by an act of parliament, and also NEF is equally established by an act of parliament. Then CIFA is the subsidiary of the IDC, there are other governance matters. But we have volunteered to be one of the first departments to move with the merger. So we are going to go to cabinet in the shortest possible time when the guidelines have been provided to propose the structure. But we have already engaged the chairperson of the institution to engage with as a board and give us proposals on what becomes our transitional mechanism and what becomes the process that we need to fast track through, because they are best placed knowing the system. But we are doing that to make sure that we stabilize, we remain in a stable organization whilst the merger and rationalization takes place. So that's the reason you are sitting with interim and acting. We would have, if the acting was not an issue, if the rationalization was not an issue, we would have completed the appointment of the CEO by this time around. Would have been, or at least would be telling you the CEO would be starting at this point in time, and would be saying we are going to advertise for the board of FIFA, because that's where we are. And Chairperson, as we sit today, we are presenting our 2019 annual report to yourself, which is work that has been done mainly to conclude the work of the FIFA administration, and in that work of the FIFA administration, there's a number of things that we have done, but as we come back in the, but you never see, you still have some transition because the next annual report that we're going to present will have the semblance of both the fifth administration and elements of the sixth administration priorities as we do the closeouts and the handovers and also the transition into a new system. But you should be comforted that as a minister, I've been engaged with the annual report, and we've verified that what is contained in the annual report represents the true state of what CIFA was. We are, and then from what we are presenting in the annual report, we are confident that there will be marked improvements from to the next annual report that you have. But what you see when you table the APP or corporate plan, you see a drastic a change into the priorities of the sixth administration, as we are all aware of. And maybe I should allow the chairman, his Mr. Mahosi Mati, to introduce himself, and the DT is Mr. Indagusa Nkumani, he's part of the secretary. I can introduce my responsibilities as the CEO, as the chairman, and the media. So I'll hand over to the chairman to introduce his team and then take over the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Minister. Thanks, Chairperson. Honourable Minister, I've already done the honour introducing the two, so I wanted to repeat. I'll try and be very pointed, my remarks. Also, that at least it would be helpful that at least we cover most of the ground before the Minister excuses herself. I assume that the members, Honourable Members, have been able to receive the documents and time and pages to the documents. So I wanted to go into the details. My colleagues will deal with the details, except to perhaps focus on two issues, the key highlights of the report and also the interventions that are, some of them are ongoing, some of them have actually been going on even before this current conflict came into the space of or was in fact appointed to decide on the activities of CIFA. The key thing, maybe start with acknowledging and perhaps tangibly also indicate to you that over the past 5 years, CIFA has been able to meet its disbursement targets. There's also been an improvement, a significant improvement on the collection rate at which the establishment has been performing. Safe to say that we know that we are especially set with challenges of impairments, and key around it, of course, being two issues, partly the whole issue around the environment in which you operate, as you know, lending to SMEs exposes you to a lot of challenges in terms of the nature of the entities themselves, but also to indicate to you that within that there is also an improvement on the rate of reduction, although it's gradual improvement, the reduction on the impairments that we've traced with. Key, I think, is to indicate that for the year under review, we have been able to exceed, or rather we almost exceeded the collection. Our collection rate stood at just below shy of 2 billion rand. That's what we felt to pick up in the report. The other key issue also relates to the prevalence. We, even in the other sister committee, we said with questions around the uneven distribution or uptake of loans across the provinces. The uptake for CIFA loans has predominantly been in six provinces. The provinces that have been lagging behind have been Northern Cape, Northwest, and the Free State. I'm pleased also to indicate that the interventions that we're making, my colleagues would also augment on that part, give you the details of the work that we're doing to make sure that we improve the situation. The other key issue that should be noted is that we have been able to meet the key development impact targets, except for the target on disabilities and township economies. And that's further work that we are putting our effort on. We all know that across institutions, of course, disabilities remain a key challenge. We've not accepted that to be the norm as a board. We're trying to see what is that to change the situation. We know that it's work in progress, but some of it will change immediately. The other point also key is the issue related to financial stability of the organization. Part of the key interventions that have been made preceding our coming to the board and coaching other there has been the whole issue. There's been a focus on initiating cost-cutting measures, and perhaps of note is for the committee to know that at least the key point that is common across institutions we've been able to put under control, which is personnel costs. So we've been able to at least put personnel costs under control. We note that the this matter of the component of expenditure is a significant area of focus going forward. And beside with that, we're trying to see what is it that we can do creatively and collaboratively to change the situation. It can be a gradual change of the situation. Let me jump just to highlight the interventions, some of which are interventions that we try to deal with at the moment. One of the key focus that the Honourable Municipal Minister will put emphasis on guiding us, the board and the CIFA family, has been to take a much more of a funds approach towards go to market. You would have noted in Honourable Maiden speech, Majesty speech, that she was very vocal about that fund. We have been beset with that, and together with the management of CIFA, we're finding our way adapting to that approach of working, and we're doing a lot of strides on that front. We've also been initiating quite a number of partnerships. Some of them are, in fact, still in the works. You will get, over time, progress reports on the amount of work and the progress that we've made on that front. And the partnerships are mainly meant to enable us to achieve two things, to increase the reach that we can get as CIFA. Some of them will be partnerships with agencies that are involved in the work of funding small enterprises. Others are partnerships with business that will help us in terms of stretching the rent and opening up the space for empowerment, creating opportunities for small enterprises to come into the system. The key challenge that we've been beset with as per the directive of the ministry is on improving collaboration or coordination of work between the work that CIDA does and what CIFA does. And over the past, from the time that we've had this office as a board, we've been engaging with CIDA at a board and operational level. Just to highlight this one point, the minister's budget speech, there was a mention of the need for us as a funding institutions within the small enterprises, SME sector, to work towards a seamless way of operation to ensure that as SMEs, new applicants and current clients, when they approach the institutions, they see one body working in harmony to assist them. Part of the key instruments that she announced was the introduction of a common template. That's part of the work that we've been doing that we've achieved successfully with CIDA. But beyond that, we've started engagement at board level. We put up a team, in fact, two teams, basically, one at governance level and another at operational level, which teams have met, want to say, to have deliberations identifying, apart from the work that the director or the minister have given, to identify further work that can be done to enhance our effectiveness on that space. I'm pleased to inform the committee, that the portal committee, that we've held such meetings and we put up an action plan that we started to engage on. The ministry and the two institutions, CIFA and CIDA, and also in collaboration with others in our space, have also initiated a program of activities that is branded as Pitch for Funding, where we go around communities, partly as part of the support of the presidential district planning model, but also as part of our normal day-to-day work, to give opportunities to applicants or potential applicants to pitch their business ideas or projects for funding. So we find it to be quite helpful in terms of giving us a richer, better penetration. The other intervention has been regional. We've taken a much more differentiated regional strategy of working in these regions as part of our quest to ensure that uptake does improve, at least in an equitable way, across provinces. And we've been putting a lot of effort on township economy, township intervention of an enterprise in township. Yet, we acknowledge, of course, that indeed the growth and progress on that front is a bit slow. So we see more increased focus on that front going forward. And lastly, on the one significant point we should also report to the committee on has been that we recognize as a board that one of the constraints on funding for SMEs has been the funding limit itself. CITA has for years been working with a funding limit of 5 million for small enterprises with a funding tenure of 5 million plus a funding tenure of 5 years. which we in our assessment was a bit outdated and was not that much helpful for small enterprises. We revised that limit to a funding limit of 15 million with a tenure of 10 years from repayment. We started to look at the transactions within that understanding. Let me stop there because there's a danger that I would like to have reported to you. So let me hand over to my colleagues, to the CEO and the CFO. Suffice that we request that you know those 2 points, the progress that you made and the interventions that you made. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson Zadehai, the members of this committee, the Minister of Small Business Development, Minister Chaveli, who, by the way, as he came in, let us run with amazing speed and agility in ensuring that we deliver in this important sector of the economy. Chairperson, thank you, Dr. Mahosi, Acting DG Kumani, thank you for the support that we continue to receive from the Ministry, the Department, the staff here in Parliament for this committee, and my colleague, Shokeji Faleleba. Let me start by just showing you the content of what we will go through this morning. We hope that the members have gone through the annual report that was delivered earlier on to Parliament last year, and some of the details and final details are captured in the report. Once more, I think it is important that when we start again possibly presenting to this committee for the first time, that we just go through the vision, the mission, and the values of CIFA. Our vision is to be the catalyst, you know, for development of sustainable small, medium, and micro enterprises and cooperatives through the provision of finance. And I believe access to finance as the core and the mantra of what we stand for will then be in a position to unlock a whole lot of other things as well. The mission, which are really the tools of how we go and achieve the vision, are outlined as you know in the slides. And I think one of the things that we need to mention as part of our objectives is the provision of finance, SMEs and cooperatives. And I believe contribute towards the creation of jobs. And importantly, to also build effective and efficient CIFA that is both financially sustainable, but importantly, where we are in a position to show the developmental impact, which touches a whole lot of areas in our country. Now, the main business and funding activities of CIFA is that we have got 3 channels through which we provide funding. On one hand, we provide funding through direct lending, where enterprises, individuals can approach CIFA through our network of offices and partners. Secondly, we provide finance through what we call the wholesale lending model. And the wholesale lending model is where we use partners. And these are your non-financial and financial intermediaries that are out there to help us have even a far much bigger and a deeper reach into the outflung areas of the country. And then we also provide what we call the cooler credit guarantee. This is a guarantee that ensures that those enterprises and owners of businesses that don't have the collateral to access capital through your commercial banks, we then stand in to make sure that we bridge that gap between whatever that may be required by the lenders and, of course, the inability of our entrepreneurs to provide that. And then, of course, importantly, when we provide funding, we go along in ensuring that we provide business support. Because just providing funding to these enterprises is not enough. We need to handhold them and make sure that we support them throughout their journey. It is important as well to mention that we have got what we call the targeted ownership groups. And this is aligned to government priorities. You will find that when government presents their medium-term strategic framework, there are three cross-cutting areas, which are your women, your youth, and people with disabilities. CIFA as well has got the measurements where we go out and ensure that we measure how do we impact this area, including, of course, your township, the rural communities, villages, and black people in general. Now we have got a sectoral involvement, and I want to mention that CIFA plays across all the sectors of the economy, from your primary right through up to tertiary sector, within the limits of what we provide in our funding, and those are outlined on the extreme right, and this importantly are also aligned to government's priority sectors that are, you know, outlined through your industrial policy, you know, action plan and other macroeconomic policies of government. The lending model, without going through it, is that at the time of reporting, which is the financial year 18-19, those were the actual limits. But I think the chairman has already outlined the fact that, you know, in having looked at ourselves and looking at the needs out there, there was a need for us to ensure that we actually up those limits, you know, as well. Now, the CIFA organizational profile, if you look at people at the time of reporting, we had a headcount of 238 people, where you had 2.5% executive, senior management at 26, but your core, which is professional and admin, at about 72%. And just in terms of the performance that the CFO will go into, is that we are a 2.2 billion total asset entity, and our collection since inception up to March, which was the end of our reporting period, was just under shy of 2 billion rand. And the loan book for the last 3 years, you know, is what we have shown on this particular slide. But I think importantly is the issue of access and footprint. We cannot afford to only be in areas where our people are, and one of the things that we are doing is to ensure that we are in every corner of this country, and in line indeed with the, you know, presidential district development model, where you have got your 44 districts, the intention is to make sure that through our collaboration with CIDA, we try and make sure that we are in a whole lot of other areas through what we call the co-location model. And in terms of governance, I think it is important that this seven-year-old child, we have had 7 years of clean and unqualified audit opinions since the establishment of CIFA, and the executive authority is the Department of Small Business Development, the shareholder being the IDC, and we, of course, you know, ensure that we comply with your PFMA and the Companies Act and all the other lending legislation like your MCR and so on. What are our differentiators? The differentiators is that as a development finance institution, our role is to make sure that we address what we call market failure. And therefore, we have got high appetite for risk in exchange for high developmental impact. In other words, where we see high development impact, we look at the cash flows that will be generated, and we will go into those sectors where, as you know, banks will normally go not go into, like your startups and so on. And the other thing that is normally not mentioned is the issue of capital moratorium. You will all know, honorable member, through you, Chair, that when you go into a commercial bank and you ask for a loan from month number one, whether it be a vehicle, a house, a home loan, they debit your account. But CIFA will ensure that we look at the availability of cash flows and ensure that we provide what we call a capital holiday up to a period of 12 months so that the entrepreneur and the business can accumulate a certain level of capital in order to start servicing our loan. And it is indeed, I mean, as I mentioned, that we look at startups and most of those with high risk, it is exactly where we need to play. Now, when one looks at research, you will know, honorable members, that the biggest demand is for your loans that are below R1 million. In actual fact, the last research by FinFind shows that I think up to about 73%, of loans that are below R1 million is where the demand is. And as a target, CIFA measures itself to say how many of loans that are below 500,000 have we extended to businesses out there. One of the other things is this thing around adverse credit record, where because of historical reasons, some of our people are what you would call, you know, blacklisted. I always say, I don't know why we don't say whitelisted. But they are blacklisted, and the issue is then they do not have the ability to attract credit. What is it that we do? We do not exclude them, but we say to the individuals, prove to us that you have made arrangements with the creditors on how you are going to settle whatever that you are owing, and on that basis, CIFA will extend, you know, the facilities to yourself. We are not a security-based or a security-backed lending. People that do not have security come to us. In actual fact, the minister has even made it clear to say, I do not want US CIFA for any loans that are 10 million and lower to ask for collateral. And this is exactly what we are doing. So it is only in situations where the owners say, we do have whatever that we have to provide, that we can take it, but it does not become the reason for us to actually provide funding to SMEs. Now, the 2018-19 organizational strategic map is really premised on those five things. Upscale, deepen its development impact, supporting clients, sustainability, turnaround of the underperforming portfolio, and move, you know, towards financial sustainability whilst we improve efficiency and effectiveness. And I don't have to go through all of that, but I think the most important thing is on the upscaling is to intensify leveraging both financial and non-financial, you know, support through the ecosystem that we have already mentioned, where we need to work closely with our sister organization, CEDA, in ensuring that there is a seamless process when clients come through the doors, you know, of the lending institution. The issue around turnaround, we know that it is inevitable that businesses will go through challenges because of, you know, a whole lot of other reasons. When businesses go through challenges, our role is to go in and look and say, can this business be turned around? If it can be turned around, we put in the right mentors. And where required, we put interventions that are actually at CIFA's cost, and we do not charge those to the entrepreneurs that we are helping. And the other thing was the reduction of impairments that were at one stage at the highest level of around, you know, 60-something percent, and you will see when we come to the balance scorecard how we have made inroads in making sure that we continuously reduce that number to an extent where we can actually be, you know, below 30%. And efficiently, what does that mean? It means we need to ensure that we address quick turnaround, which we know is, you know, a topical issue, because when entrepreneurs come into CIFA, they expect us to provide them with answers within a very short space of time. Quickly, the loan performance, just the journey of since CIFA started, I think it is important for us to mention that to date, we have approved just under 6 billion. We have dispersed a total of 6.8 billion, and somebody will ask and say why, you know, the difference between the approval and the disbursement is that when money is in the hands of our partners, at times it rolls over more than once, you know, to the businesses. and then finance just under 360,000 businesses. This includes your SMMEs and cooperatives, where we facilitated over 400,000, jobs. And I think the number that I had mentioned without repeating it was the collection. So it is important to note that we are hard on SMMEs to say, we lend you money, your role is to make sure that you're sustainable, you pay back, because that money, when it goes into the kitchen, it gives an opportunity to the next SMME that is, you know, in the queue. This is just the performance highlight without going through it that I have already included. And I think it is important that we see a number of 1.2 billion rand dispersed into the economy to make sure that we can touch as many, you know, entrepreneurs as we can. And this is just for the financial year 2018/19. And going through the funding activities, you know, I believe that the largest portion of our funding, as you can see, was conducted through our wholesale SME, which is normally followed by your informal sector. This is one area where we are making, you know, great strides in ensuring that just the deepest, you know, part of the economy and the rural areas, and where you will realize as I go forward that most of the economies are driven by women, and they are amongst the best payers when it comes to, you know, loans that we actually, you know, lend to them. This is the spatial, you know, development impact across the provinces. Mpumalanga and Limpopo is where we are finding that most of our, you know, funding is on the informal and microfinance program, where we are having some of our funders that are helping us there. And the strategic partnerships that we have is to ensure that we go across the length of this country, so that we can touch as many, you know, SMEs as we can. Now, the development impact, as we continue, is just a breakdown in the targeted groups between your youth, your women, black, and townships, and those are the numbers as we just unpack them per province. And I think the chairperson has already outlined without, you know, elaborating the point around the fact that where we know we are not having as much impact, we are having a number of initiatives to make sure that we actually turn the corner. Whilst we are also not oblivious to the fact that many of these are driven by the economic structure of this country, and therefore you find that it tends to actually follow that particular trend. The operational performance, without really going too deep into it, I was just wanting to show you the three channels that I mentioned, which is direct lending, the wholesale lending, and also, you know, the cooler credit guarantee. And I think you will see that in all of this, when it comes to your approvals and disbursements and other groups, it is where we have exceeded, you know, at individual levels as well. Some of the clients that are in the report as well for you just to see some of the businesses that we are actually funding. SMMEs, you know, what you will call the, you know, the qualified small enterprises, you know, the exempted micro enterprises. Those are some of the individuals that we are funding, and we are really proud to say that in a small way we are making a difference in the lives of some of our people in the country. When it comes to the informal sector, this again are the numbers of how we have, you know, impacted some of the sectors. And you will see on the numbers that majority of what we are doing is female entrepreneurs. You'll see that with a target of 90, having managed to do about 310 million rand, and the black entrepreneurs as well, you know, going more, you know, towards funding those. So it is important, I think, for us to mention the fact that almost 99.8% of businesses that are supported in this particular sector were women owned, and those are based in your rural areas to the value of 240. 32% growth that we have seen, you know, from the previous year. And I think this is something that we should pride ourselves in ensuring that we, you know, we continue to support those businesses. And I think importantly is what I mentioned, that, you know, we also work in partnership with our wholesale and retail, you know, sitters, to make sure that we can support some of the enterprises. I think you will know that with the fresh produce, it is where mostly, you know, women go in to buy your fresh produce to go and sell around the streets, and those are the areas that we try and make sure that we support. This is our wholesale lending performance, without necessarily going through those things, but maybe to mention that some of the highlights is that in the previous year we managed to secure 30 million euros from the European Commission in collaboration with the government of South Africa. And the first 10 million euros is going to be used exclusively for enterprise and supplier development. This is where we look at the value chain and say, how can we help those businesses that are in the value chain, you know, of industry. In actual, yesterday, there was a very interesting business that we funded where an entrepreneur is working together with VW, producing parts that go into the vehicles that we are selling. And this is part of what this particular scheme, you know, will be supporting. Or alternatively, where we actually supply to your retailer, but those are fresh produce that are grown by, you know, by black people. And the 20 million euros that will be going into the cooler credit guarantee will be deployed this year. And the intention is to work more towards your innovation sector and other sectors like green economy. The cooler credit guarantee is the one that I mentioned, where we go in and we partner with commercial banks, but the most important thing is to make sure that we take risk on behalf of the small enterprises. And if this ranges between 50% up to 80% of the risk that we take on the loans that would have been given by your commercial bank. Now, I don't need to go, I think, through some of these examples. You surely can go through them as well. But maybe to mention the fact that in every economy, and especially that of South Africa, is that we are having businesses that are going through challenges, the distressed businesses. And I am also glad to mention that the ministry has taken a decision to actually put money aside so that in this coming year we can start helping the interventions of going into those businesses that have gone into distress, not because of historical reasons, but because of where we are finding ourselves. So we will design, you know, the eligibility criterion of how we will help those businesses so that they use the money to cover the operational expenses as we work out on the turnaround, you know, and the mentorship in those businesses as well. SIFA owns a portfolio of properties which are in all the areas in our country. To date, we have got about 47 properties that we own, and most of these are actually in the target market, in your townships, in your rural areas. And and the reason why we say 43 is that because some of them already is where the clients will approach us and say, can we actually, as a body of entrepreneurs sitting around a particular building, make an offer to buy, you know, the building from SIFA. We have successfully actually done some of those. I know in Foslorel that we successfully, you know, handed over the building to some of the entrepreneurs that are in those areas. Maybe at this stage, I will then hand over to my colleague, Shoki, just to quickly go through the financial performance, and then I will then do a few minutes of the closing remarks.
Before Shoki comes in, may I take company of BDG? I need you for the next meeting.
No, we don't do that. I just want to mention what you still here. Minister, before we release you, members of this committee also serve in another committee, which is chaired by Honorable Mwema, we normally would have the joint management committee meetings. We look at both committees and we review the programs of the two committees that what was then tabled last week in that meeting, which was adopted by the meeting, that our approach going forward with regard to the annual performance plans and the annual reports, that we should have them jointly with the portfolio committee instead of you coming to present in the portfolio committee and then again later you present in the select committee. We agree that we all go to the portfolio committee, we look at the program of the portfolio committee, because then it's the department, not only this department, but all the departments that are under these two committees. Because usually it will be the department with its entities reporting on the annual performance plans and also reporting on the annual reports. So we want to create a space, we want to deal with the annual performance plans or annual report, so that we can then invite you on a specific issue, maybe a specific policy issue, so that we don't get delayed by the annual reports or EPPs, important that they are. But also we would like to even go and have what we call oversight meetings. Maybe some areas, as you are indicating, the provinces, your footprint, because we were working from Cape Town, we will identify one of your projects in Cape Town and visit that particular project with yourselves present and then with you. So this is what we agree with that we'll be doing. So what we will also, in the letter when we send it to you, we'll also, so that the annual report or APB to also take into account that you will represent the provinces. So it should not just be the one for the National Assembly, where you just talk about the annual report, but it must also indicate the provincial perspective of what is happening in each of the provinces. So we'll expect that in the report of the department, but also in the report of its entities. But we'll formalize that, but I thought that we have things for the individual in here, so that I indicate that this is perhaps when we, because I'm sure in March, April, we will be dealing with the APPs now, of 2020-2021. So this is, we'll then be all together with the portfolio committee of the National Assembly. But in the report, we'll also expect that provincial perspective is carried in the reports as well. So I just wanted to indicate that before you leave.
Thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the joint meetings will be helpful. Maybe just to assure you, given that the cabinet has adopted the district-based development model, our planning is all based in not only per province, but we go to the granularity of detail of districts. And so at least the executive is hearing, so it will pass the message to your colleagues and CIDA. That is not CIDA. So you have to pass your colleagues and CIDA to say it's not only the minister who's demanding a line of sight to the district level, it's also at the legislative arm that they are demanding the same line of sight. We, in terms of the marching orders we've given them, we've been clear, we've articulated the strategy across provinces and across districts, and then we're expecting them to give us input on how they're responding to the strategic direction for district. And so the APPs that will come, corporate plans, when they come through, we are expecting to do that. If they are not complying, I'll personally request an extension of submission dates because I told them I won't sign if he doesn't respond to what is the strategy telling him of the president. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Very much, Chairperson. Minister, mine is just a very short request. As much as I understand when you explained to us about the issue of the interim board, the AD, I was looking in front of our department here. We are having only one woman. So please, just a request, whatever position that you have in the department, can you also not forget to implement this issue of gender issue, gender parity, because I need to be able to do it. That is only to credit because we are a political head of the department. Thank you, Chair.
I need to defend myself. I think I'll fight with the chairman why he brought a delegation that is predominantly male. I'm sure in CEDA, if the CEO and the chairman comes, it will be an all female team. So we've got that balance and we're working towards that balance. I think I'm one of the few who have been pushing the gender balance. So Sifa, you've heard for yourself. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Minister. You are listed. You can continue, CFO.
Payments again
are sitting at almost 50%, meaning that for every rent dispersed, we are only collecting 43 cents for every rent dispersed. So we are still having big challenges. Again, on the accumulated impairment, you will see just on the loans, excluding investments, for every rent dispersed, we are only collecting 34 cents, meaning we are losing 56%. But the chair has mentioned it's a factor of many things, both the environment, the economic environment, or also the sector that we are dealing with. SMEs is a challenging environment, especially the startups, because CIFA is in a different risk profile, where we also do really lend to a clientele that normal commercial banks will not lend to. So it is really, but we've also managed to change our collections approach. Really, we've initiated impairment reduction initiatives, which is why the loans that have been dispersed post 1 April 2016 are attracting a lower impairment rate than previously. If you go to the next slide, I will also, we've already mentioned our expenses. You will see that the personnel expenses have really been maintained year on year with slight increases. Our other operating expenses have actually declined from 83 million in 2016 to 2019. Again, this is despite the inflation. The only big challenge is that the interest received on loans and advances, which has already declined year on year and does remain a challenge. It's declined from 107 million in 2016 to 2019. The other issue has been the decline in the MTF allocation. The fiscus, the monies that we are receiving from the fiscus have been declining. You will see that in 2016 we had received 106 million from the government, and that number was sitting at 229. But we have been fortunate enough that we have been reallocated approximately 2.8 billion for other funded requirements, especially on our township and rural I think I'll pass this two slides because we've already really repeated this.
Thank you very much. Maybe just in closing, is that we have got what we call the balanced scorecard that we use to measure ourselves against set targets, which are approved by, you know, the board of CIFA and also come to these committees for you to see what are the things that we are going to be doing in that particular year. So looking through this particular you know, balance scorecard, you will see the areas where we made big strides in achieving, those that we have not achieved with it, you know, that last column where it says achieved, yes, not achieved. And then going on with the access to finance, especially around the development impact, we did mention that the youth-owned businesses, township is where we are still having challenges. And I will then, at the end, talk to some of the initiatives that we are embarking on. Maybe importantly as well is this issue around the number of days, you know, the turnaround times, where we are, ensuring that from time to time we measure ourselves in order to improve as we provide loans, you know, to SMEs. So you will see, therefore, that based on the indicator where we have exceeded 100%, you know, we have got 11, and then where we have partially achieved between 75 and 99 is 5 indicators. And maybe let me just quickly, Chair, go through the way forward. I mentioned the fact that we received 30 million euros, which at 15 rands to a euro translated to 450 million rands. The first 150, we are going to have what we call one-to-one matching. So we received 10, you know, 150 million from the Department of Small Business, and then we as CIFA will match that with another 150, so that we then have got a 300 million fund. And this will be earmarked exclusively for your enterprise and supply development. And the fund is going to provide concessionary funding. It is priced at concessionary rate to SMMEs through our financial intermediaries. And then the last 300 million of that 450 will be earmarked for innovation. Innovation in the sense that what are the innovative ways in which you can, you know, deploy money to SMMEs, whether it be through your fintech or other things, including other sectors like green economy, agro-processing, and so on. And we will then be utilizing our cooler credit guarantee. And the reason for that, just to mention, is that the leverage effect on you giving 300 million to cooler credit guarantee, you use someone else's balance sheet, and that would be the commercial bank. And with 300 million, you can end up actually leveraging 6 times. That 300, because the bank will then use their own balance sheet to lend to SMMEs. All that you're doing is standing in as a guarantor for any potential default, you know, on those loans. And I think that for us is one of the instruments we are using to ensure that we can touch as many SMMEs as we can, but once more, cleverly using the commercial bank's balance sheet for them to go out and lend. The Small Business and Innovation Fund, which was a fund that was announced through the State of the Nation, addressed by the President in the previous year. It was exclusively there to make sure that we support SMEs in the early stage of business development, and where we were going out on specific innovation and making sure that those, you know, young people that have got innovative ideas, we support them through this, and we can therefore provide a number of instruments that are patient as we lend to these SMEs so that we can assure, you know, them of success. We also, through the minister's budget vote, you have heard of the 100,000 youth-owned enterprises that was mentioned. So since November 2019, CIFA has been going around the provinces. And we have started with the provinces where we have got the lowest uptake of our capital. We started in the north, you know, northwest, and then we went to Mpumalanga, we went to, you know, this early this year, we were in the Northern Cape. And today, we have supported these 674 youth-owned businesses. And the intention is those businesses, once they go through our credit, you know, processes, they will then be given loans. That will range, you know, from 100,000 to about 1 million. And we found this to be a very, I believe, an inclusive process. Because you go to young people and say, pitch your ideas. They come to a committee, but we prepare them beforehand. And once they come to that particular committee, we look at the ideas and look at how we can strengthen them so that they become bankable. And these sessions will be continuing as we go forward as well. The other very innovative model that I believe is important to mention is when Minister Ntshavheni came in, she mentioned the fact that the time for grants is gone, where you provide grants to projects and they are not sustainable. Some of them, you know, where they just become white elephants. We are now providing what we call a blended finance. In other words, we take grant and we mix it with a repayable loan. And this grant is conditional on you achieving certain things. In this particular case, what are the conditions? The first gatekeeper is that you need to create a minimum of 10 jobs. Once you create a minimum of 10 jobs, it means you will qualify to get this conditional grant. Then we say, are you a young person or not? Thirdly, are you in a township or a rural area? Fourthly, are you actually in the priority sectors of the economy? Agro-processing, manufacturing, pharmaceutical, you name it, you know, creative industries, and lastly, of course, the stage of the business that we are funding, because the younger the business, the higher the chances of it obviously not succeeding, unlike, you know, a business that is already, you know, 3 years, 5 years older. Once those things have been ticked, it will then determine the size of grants that you will get together with the repayable loan. And we found that this will go a long way in ensuring sustainability of these businesses, but importantly, success because once businesses are less geared, you know, you don't put in too much debt into them, the chances of them succeeding are far much higher than when you just put 100% debt. And the reason for that being, because many of our people don't have their own money, you end up putting 100% debt. So this, as an instrument, really will go a long way in ensuring that our impairments are reduced and performance of our book is also enhanced. Thank you. And maybe just to hand over to the chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO. Just 2 points that I realize we omitted, and that's part of our work going forward. One of the things that they missed that given a directive for us to look at, and which we 100% agree with, is the fact that naturally when you're dealing with the current economic environment, you'd also be confronted by challenges of enterprises, and perhaps more so small enterprises in their large numbers going into distress. So part of the issue that part of the work that we started to look at with much greater focus is what kind of intervention can we make where there's a justifiable case that you could in fact give a leg up to a small enterprise as it navigates these turbulent times so that it can remain at least above water and be sustainable going forward. We also, we in fact part of the work that we're doing, which is what we picked up as a board as we came in, was to have a slightly different outlook in terms of how we deal with issues of properties. The CFO has in fact reported on the performance of the property portfolio. We do have challenges on that front also, we should indicate. So part of what we have begun to look at, in fact it's working and that is currently underway, is to look at the entire property portfolio by on a case-by-case basis, to look at what is that we can do, either by means of disposal, as in either through selling of that property, or perhaps in cases where it warrants a donation, donate it to another state institution for better use, or reposition that property, which is a key, in fact, key element for us, reposition that property for it to be able to support the ceramic development, whether through incubators or providing working space for germinating assets for them to be properly. The other point which we thought is important that we bring you up to speed on, because definitely we're going to be interacting with you on going forward, is how can we in fact sustainably improve the level of impairment that we currently face as city. We've tasked the management team to do a proper review of the notebook, particularly to the whole issue around impairment, with a view of where justifiable, as we said, one of the key challenges that we that contributed to the impairment rate has been the historical question that had to do with the particular industrial period during the last panel, which we think there could be justifiable cases for us to initiate write-offs. And let's just in fact clearly indicate, because when it's once you say write-offs, people get to misunderstand what you mean. Write-offs doesn't mean that you don't chase the money. What you actually do, you quarantine that and continue to chase. So in accounting terms, it's not like you throw it in the bin, you forget about it. You do that because there are guidelines in accounting that allow you justify to in fact write off those impairments and have a different approach in fact of chasing those that are still owing you as an institution. So it's a matter that we'll continue to appraise you on. As you said, it's work that is being done very prudently. We want to make sure that there's a proper assessment in case we reach that decision, as far as some of the enterprises or some of the loans are concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I have said that when you respond, you say that then for purposes of accountability, it's written off how to committees monitor, because I don't know if it should still be there in terms of reporting to the committees, if it's already been written off. But you say that there will be other ways of chasing it. How then the committee know that we are really chasing it? Honorable members, I'm also concerned that the number of members who have left, but it's a matter that I think that we must raise with the chief of the NCOP, because I know some of them have attended other meetings. I think it's a matter we must raise with the chief. We can't arrange other meetings when the committees are, have been committees are allocated between 10 and 1. Now, if there are other meetings, undermining the committee meeting. So it's a matter of, I think, the two of us must raise with the two. Can we now take questions? Start with you and then go down.
Ladder.
supplier development area. I just want to check in terms of, I mean, in terms of the first part, your interface with provincial economic and supporting avenues that are there. Like I said, you were able to go to the key programs. In terms of that, is there any, could you do anything in terms of whether they organize or not, and what is it that you can do to make sure that such avenues that are there, obviously they are strengthened. But also the village SMEs, because mainly you won't get any collateral because of the setup. They don't have certificate of ownership. In that kind of situation, how have you dealt with it in the past? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, let me start to thank the department in supporting women in business in this country. Your percentage is good, and I'm happy because also it's including the ones in the rural area. But I think you are not going to be able to give me the answer that I'm gonna question now. The select committee, we are not the same as the portfolio committee. We are here, we are representing our provinces. As much as I'm happy about your percentage, the manner in which you support our women in business, one would love to know this is number. But I don't think maybe you can give me that answer now. True, Honorable Chairperson, I just want to know what is IFA planning to do differently to improve its performance, particularly on meeting its youth target. The third one, Honorable Chair, I just want to know, could SIVA elaborate on the factors that are affecting the viability of business proposal and how the agency plan to improve the situation? I think I've got all my three questions. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
If you can get the one of disabled in terms of the target here.
Yeah, thank you.
Honorable Lord.
Thank you. You know, one of the things that we've been raising is this CIVA and CIDA that just seems to operate in silos. And now you touch on that there's going to be closer collaboration. And you touch on that there's certain teams that have now started to work together. But I mean, when can we start expecting to see tangible results, or you can come with concrete things that there's closer collaboration? The outcomes of it. I'm going to use one example, is the accessibility. My assumption is, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that you have a footprint for CIFA, you've got a footprint for CEDA, and some of them might even be duplications in the same areas. So if you're going to have the closer collaboration, that's one of the first places that you can, one, expand your footprint, but also to cut costs by sharing space. And it's those kind of things that, instead of just saying that we'll be having closer collaboration, I want to know what it is that the two entities are going to do. And I'll ask the same question for them, and then we'll correlate the answers with one another. So I'll just say that in advance as well. One of the things that I'm really worried about is the how across all of these entities, departments, intermediaries that can provide funding, that you don't have double dipping. It is anecdotal evidence that I've gotten is that there's people that's getting quite good at this and getting funding from different entities, and that is a concern that I have. I'll follow up about your properties with a written question, because there's a bit more detail I want around that, but I'm just putting you a note on that. And then just your direct lending that is going down. What if, let me rephrase that, how do you differentiate yourself with all of the factors that you now include of making sure that you've got guarantees against money that's being borrowed, taking lower risks? How are you differentiating yourself then from banks? Because it seems like you are moving closer and more in line with the work that they are doing. Okay, that's all for now.
Thank you, Chair. You touched on the disabled persons. That is something that we have to look at, because we know that the national norm is 3% of people with disabilities have to have access. But I'd like to know as well, how many people in your office are people with disabilities? Because these people just have a different approach when they go out into areas and speak to people with disabilities, because they know what the challenges are themselves. So if we could get some feedback on that as well. Talking about your township investments, do you have any discussions with municipalities? Because invariably you find our mothers and our ladies sitting out in blazing sun in terrible weather conditions, but there is no structure for them. There are no ablution facilities. What do we do, and what does CIFA do to assist these women through engagement, or not just women, people that are entrepreneurs? What is the engagement with municipalities in this regard? Then I would like to know, you spoke about your turnaround strategy regarding distressed businesses. Are we able to see what your strategies are going to be, what the timeframes are going to be, and how are you going to assist these distressed businesses? You spoke about the monies that you've raised through the European Union and the $3 billion SPIF. Great for that. Can you give us an indication of what the interest rate is, or is this a gift? Your loans to entrepreneurs, etc., what is their interest rate? And then, speaking of these distressed businesses, how many are currently in, if I can put it in inverted commas, Chair, in contravention of not being able to do the repayment? And then two last questions. You have 82 access points. Where are they placed? Are they accessible to our township and rural entrepreneurs and startup businesses? And then I don't know if you have anything to do with the Mpumalanga International Fresh Produce Market. If you do, could you give me some information on that, please? Because it looks like a white elephant to me. But if you don't have anything to do with it, then I'll accept the answer. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay.
No, thanks, Chair. I think I'm mostly covered.
Perhaps the question that was raised by Honorable Lord with regard to the issue of double dipping, what impact does it have on the issue of impairments? Could be that person now, because he has all these loans from various institutions, and now he's unable to sell his. Honorable Lord, also the C CEDA, we'll be meeting with CEDA next week. But also, as I was indicating, that last week we adopted this approach of having the department with its entities. Even though then CEDA is not, I mean, CIFA is not really an entity per se of small business. It belongs still in the economic development department. Yeah. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. We will try and juggle to respond as much as we can. I might have missed one or two points. I think particularly the questions that were raised by Honorable Boshoff. I think there's a suspended zone question, but I guess my colleagues would have picked it up. Just to perhaps deal with the questions and comments that were raised by Honorable Mshodi. And perhaps it would apply to everybody else. We may not necessarily have the complete details of information relating to particular provinces, except to say it's in the report. We do reflect how many enterprises were assisted, but we're willing, we can try to write back to you on the detail of the province to indicate the uptake, where it won, the names of the enterprises. I'm sure we should be able to provide you with such. What are we trying to do to meet the youth target? Part of what we reported on earlier was this pitch for funding sessions. And let's just complement that, not just leave it as if it's a new invention. It used to be done by CEDA. They would say to you, they call it pitch and perfect. Right. So when the ministry was promoting greater collaboration, it was renamed Pitch for Funding, which I think it makes sense, because when you say Pitch and Perfect, it may not necessarily be understood. When you say Pitch for Funding, it's a very clear, direct message. So we've agreed, all of us, that's part of the work, we're talking tangible results. We've agreed in terms of our discussions also with CEDA that all of us are going to use one phrase. It's Pitch for Funding. It's not a Pitch for Perfect or Pitch anything, just Pitch for Funding. So that we use a common phrase to what I've been talking about. The question that Honorable Mshodi raised related to supporting the viability of proposals, I think it was also raised, if I'm not mistaken, by I should have started with Honorable Mimani. Sorry for that. I'll come back. Sorry for that. So viability for funding. The attitude at CIFA is that for as long as somebody came through the door to apply, the documentation may be available. Part of the responsibility that we have is to, where feasible, assist that person to make sure that the application is compliant. So that is the attitude, first of all. But of course, there are instances where it may be possible to get something that is not a business, an enterprise, to become a business enterprise. So there should be that. Somebody may come with something that looks like it's a very viable idea, but when it's taken through the necessary evaluation process, it's found that it really cannot be viable. Remember, the underlying drive for anybody who lends money, we must be satisfied that the person who's borrowing the money can demonstrate the ability to repay. No matter how soft I will be making for that person. Let me go back to Honorable Mimani. I think the first point was a comment which we understand it to be the need for us to commit to ensuring that we are able to share with you the commitment of the project. And like I said, it's a shared question or comment that was just made by the Honorable Mshodi, and the reflection of the provincial perspective. We noted that we made sure that we increase the interest going forward, we're able to reflect that request. What are we doing to increase uptake of youth? I think I've also reflected on that and I've responded to that. But part of what we should add on, we know
we are quite aware ourselves that part of the challenge that we face as CIFA, and you'd be surprised, even some among those that are sophisticated, they seem to be sophisticated. And that CIFA is not necessarily known. And perhaps it's part of the many changes that have taken place in terms of tomorrow, people know there's a cooler that is living along there. So there have been so much institutional changes over time that people have gotten confused. Sometimes people confuse CIFA with CIDA, they don't know what stands for what. So that's part of the work that we've noted, which we shouldn't try to do going forward from a branding point of view, from a communicating point of view, but also from a service offering point of view. So when you're talking, I'll come back to tangible results maybe on that front. Let me just press a pause. I'll come back and explain that to that. So the idea when we go out, whether it's a district model, talking about interaction. So the Anglophone says, let me give it to the chair, to the CFO, the CEO to respond on that one, if you want to elaboration on that. For the idea is that when we go on this pitch for funding, and ordinarily in any other way that we should be doing, but also as we support the presidential drive on district planning, district planning model, is that we should make sure that there's cohesion between government institutions. So, but again, beyond that, except for the apart from the practical implementations I'm saying now, part of what we've directed as a board is that we should go through a very elaborate exercise of stakeholder analysis and mapping so that we begin to change our communication and outreach approach. We're also going to be rolling out a number of outreach approaches, including the simple decision not to be holding all board meetings in Gauteng. You should be able to go out to Mpumalanga and so on, and be able to interact with our staff in those regional offices and interact with clients. Even if it means that on the day we say we're going to have a board from this time, we invite members of the public to come and interact with the board so we get a sense. But I think greater focus, of course, should be on making sure that within the state there's better collaboration amongst us so that we speak with one voice. So we've noted the NEDA issue as one of those institutions that we should be, and the Hamakara Chamber of Commerce. But Honorable Maimane, I think the message that we want to put across to
us.
Let me perhaps for us, I think we would want to leave the committee with a very clear message. I'm not one of those that when we hear about meeting, when we leave this meeting, we close our phones off, we don't communicate. We are open to take up any suggestion, any contact that you want us to follow. We believe that's 24 hours that we must. So we know that we can be very formal and whatever, but there are those instances when a person, even if the application has been rejected, would think that it's better that they talk to a chairperson. So we do take up those and respond. So feel free, even amongst yourselves, if you want to refer matters to us for us to respond to. There's no issue about it, it's our responsibility. We are there to do that work. We are in fact respond to that. So it, at least it helps in terms of bridging that divide and distance between us and the community that we're supposed to be serving. So we've noted, I understood the issue about assisting the NEDAs in order to be organized. There's a clear call. We've noted that in response there. So when we talk about support, like I said, so even if it's a rural enterprise that is not registered, our view is that we don't stop at just the application authority. We should be able to guide. Please do the text. A lot of people don't even know that today. And perhaps you just do IT literacy. You can inflate people to register you sort it out. So that's part of the outreach we should be doing. But beyond that, when we talk about footprint, co-sharing, in terms of collocation, as the CEO indicated, we include in that message the understanding that we have to locate ourselves at least at the level of districts where we can. So we should be able to communicate also with the municipalities and find a way in which we can get some space for us to be active within that fund. We're not claiming to be everywhere. we think we should be there. So we talk, the minister indicated the decision of the cabinet, for instance, on the mansion. This becomes part of the work that we should be doing. When we talk about properties, this becomes part of the work that we should be doing. And our sense is that we cannot be able to provide services unless we look at it for the issue around densification, population concentration, have a targeted approach in terms of how we make ourselves accessible to our people, in terms of our location, including, by the way, for the youth. The need for us to take cognizance that the youth are better literate from a technology point of view. So we should not only rely on physical contact alone, we should also look at how do we make it possible for them to have the virtual access to us as an institution. The point, so let me just deal with this last part and I'll leave the colleagues to deal with the rest of the questions. The point on CIFA, I just want to spend a bit of time on CIFA-CIDA collaboration because I tried to explain that earlier. Honorable Lord. So Honorable Lord, the what we have done as per the directive of the ministers by the speech, the first thing that we did was to at board level between myself and the chairperson, and this is the final former chairperson of CIDA, but we've still had another engagement with the new chairperson, was to have a person-to-person engagement, just to try and crystallize what we think could be possible beyond the budget speech. That's when we agreed, we went back to our boards and said, board, we propose that we have a 3-5 board level and 3-5 at the operational level. And the 3-5 at the operational level is not necessarily that we have to stop everything that was already going on, like for instance the work on the template. So for instance, the work on the factory of the template, the actual what actually happened, we as CIFA delegated a resource from our side to go and virtually sit on the CIDA side to work on this thing until it's complete and until the ministers are able to pronounce on the progress. So we do have a template. If you log in, you'll be able to get a template which should be processed that not only captures the first level of information, but is able to give that person an opportunity to be directed to the right institution. Ideally, we should, when everything is matured and everything is working well, be able, when you receive that information, to refer a client to even the level of IDC, the client that is supposed to be going to ITC. So it's not limited to CIFA-CIDA per se. You just try and bring harmony to the entire ecosystem of SMB funding. So that's the one part. Secondly, as we said, we have gone out physically with CIDA and CIFA to the communities and allowed people, give people an opportunity to pitch in those sessions and evaluate, preliminary evaluate ideas that were pitched by my potential client and therefore refer them to the next level where they can complete proper applications for funding. So there is that progress. It's just that coverage has not been across the country. We can't be everywhere at all times. But for the areas that we've been able to pick up, a sizable number of applications that are in the pipeline, some of them would have reached an advanced stage in terms of assessment. We've noted the effect that you said you're going to write a question on properties. We'll await to respond on that. In fact, just on the side, just to indicate, although there was a report, maybe you might have come across, that was done by the previous board on the properties, and predominantly the report, the decision was saying we have to dispose of the properties. We took a decision that we believe should be different, which is us going out actually to understand, because we need to just give a blanket decision and say this is what you take properties. But in property, if you've been exposed to entrepreneurs, you can't take a decision property unless you have a look and feel of it. You have to be there and understand the environment of that property. And you can begin to see what is it that you could do probably on a case by case before you even bring in a value and look at those things. But for us, it is not only about decide whether to dispose or not to dispose. So like we here today, tomorrow we've combined the appearance you're coming tomorrow with a visit to the properties in the facility. We'll put up a program for the next 4 or 5 weeks, wherein we are going to, so this week we are here, today we are here, tomorrow we are in the Western Cape, we skip a week, next week we are going to be in Durban. In the same week we are going to proceed from Durban to Port Elizabeth, then we go to Gauteng, we'll be looking at those, and we know their properties are several. Those are the properties solely within the ambit of CIFA. In 1937, we are talking about properties that we are talking about. So So you have to take a very informed decision. But the expectation is that after the visit, we can then begin to sit down and put up some kind of a strategy for property for city, instead of just saying we dispose of it. And by the way, the decision to dispose, I'm not sort of critical to the previous board. It came out of the pressure of underperformance of these properties and the drain that they were causing to the budget of CIFA. We believe there could be an opportunity to have some kind of a turnaround approach for empowerment and for making it possible for SMEs to have opportunities for them to run their business, operate their premises from those premises. The direct lending decline, let me leave it to the CEO to give you a update on that. And knowledge around differentiation. I think Honorable Boshoff, I'll leave it also to his colleagues, in fact, and the EU and the SBI Fund. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Maybe let's just quickly, I think, also add to what the chairperson said on the question of Honorable Moinwang. One other thing that we will also be doing regarding youth, as pronounced during the State of the Nation by the President, is working closely as well with NYDA. I think you all know that there is 1,000 that needs to be touched, where the department will be working closely with them. And the issue there is we need to have a seamless process so that when those entrepreneurs are ready for funding, then there is actually an automatic escalation to come to CIFA so that we can provide them with loans over and above the fact that we'll continue with other programs that have already been mentioned. Now, let me come to the issue of women in the Free State. You're correct, Honorable Moshodi, that one of the biggest things that we have realized with how one can mobilize women entrepreneurship is through, you know, almost the similar model to Grameen model, the Grameen Bank. And that is what ourselves, you know, the Small Enterprise Foundation, the Pagamani are doing in other provinces. So we have been saying to them, CIFA has got money and we want you to be across all the country. Because we realize that their model is tried and tested and it has got much success in ensuring that you provide loans of literally around, you know, 5,000 rand. That gets turned every time when, you know, the group comes to borrow, and then they pay, and then you can roll this money at times, three times a month, because of the amount of things that get bought. CIFA did a pilot in Free State, Manau, the fresh produce, where we were looking at how we can mobilize. The community that, as you would know, goes in the wee hours of the day to this market to go and buy the fresh produce and come and sell. Unfortunately, due to some of the monopolistic, you know, challenges that we actually had there, where, as you know, you are having what you call the agents. And these agents, what is it that they do is they go to a farmer and they have got the ability to actually amass the best produce to themselves and not really open a window for smaller buyers to come and buy. And you find that they sell to the likes of Woolies, you know, Food Lovers Market and so on. And therefore, our intention is to relook at this model and say how from the lessons that we learned, we can ensure that we actually, you know, revitalize the project. Also, the issue around the access to finance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would know that when you go to a market, they don't actually use physical cash. How do we make sure that we provide a guarantee? And then through cards that they normally get, they will then have access in order to buy as much as they can. And we are going to look at that because it's a model that we believe will go a long way in empowering, you know, really, you know, people that are providing the livelihood in our country. I think, Honorable Lewitt, what you mentioned around the issue of the collocation, if you go to page 7 of our annual report, we actually indicated through this geographic footprint, and you will see that where it is CIFA's main office, the color would be red. I hope my color, I'm not color blind,
and then the co-location is our green. Now, we also indicated the areas where we need to be. But I think let me put it on record that CEDA has got far much more outreach and reach than us. And the intention is to utilize those areas so that we cannot, I mean, we can be all over the country. And one of the things we have done through the CEDA-CEPA collaboration is to look at where they are, the leases that are about to expire, so that where CEPA one, as you correctly said, we do not end up getting an office next door, but look at extending our stay together with CEDA. And those are the things that we are doing. But importantly, if you look just as an example with CEF, it has got about 187 branches. And one of the things that we want to use is that because they are lending money on our behalf to end beneficiaries, to make sure that we collaborate with them around using those as additional access finance and their internships and their for the brick and mortar and so on. And those are some of the things that we need to look at as well. You're correct around the direct lending. Direct lending, the actual decline was from a number of fronts. When CIFA, even in foundation's phase, ramped up its disbursement, unfortunately through the lending, into mostly your procurement and contract finance, we lost quite a lot of money. With contracts where entrepreneurs, because we didn't have the sessions due to the MFMA, the PFMA, where they wouldn't see the payments to CIFA, but in the construction space specifically, that's where we had challenges. So through the tightening of our credit policies, we then started realizing that obviously, but the good thing is you will see in our 1920 that we are actually starting to have an uprank, because we have decided that in lending space, you cannot be everything to everyone. You need to start developing specific pockets of speciality so that whatever that you do, you are good at. And just to give you an example, now when we fund contract finance, session of proceeds becomes a requirement because we realize that entrepreneurs, when they receive money, they disappear. And it is important that we make sure that, you know, we have got access, you know, rather the session of the payment as well. Now, you mentioned also how do we differentiate ourselves with banks, especially around the direct lending. I believe that I always say to entrepreneurs, if you come to CIFA and say, how can you better my interest rate because the bank is giving whatever, you've come to the wrong place. Our role should be to address market failure. Where the bank says, for us to fund a franchise, we need 30% of unencumbered cash from an entrepreneur. CIFA should say, in us analyzing the business, we realize that the cash flows of this business can actually, you know, service 100% load. How do we then make sure that we do not have those requirements by providing, you know, capital? And the blended finance, by the way, has come in handy in ensuring that whatever that would have been required of the entrepreneur as own contribution is now taken care of by the blended finance. And we have started seeing a lot of traction in the direct lending book, because that helps us with some of the challenges that entrepreneurs will have in the commercial bank. So you will see quite a bit of uptake in that area, because we have got targeted programs through the, you know, as I say, the EU, the blended finance, and all other programs that we are having. Honorable Boshoff, you are right. The issue around people with disability is a challenge. You know, I was actually saying, I hope we do not actually, also hide this particular issue. So as I stand here today, I think one is indeed embarrassed to say that we would have loved to be seeing more employees of CIFA with this particular, you know, issue. And there is a concerted effort by our HR to say, let us go out there and look for them. You know, for instance, at the call center, you know, at the reception, where people can help us, it is actually important to do that. So I don't have the stats to say we have got 2 or 5 or whatever, but it is something that it is part of our target, because
these are designated groups where we need to make sure that we empower them. And we will definitely, through you, Chair, you know, give you reports of what are the steps and initiatives we are taking in making sure that we can help people with disability at CIFA. The issue around distressed businesses, I think we have already mentioned, the department will be looking at that. Now, when you mentioned the EU's beef, or rather the small business, you know, innovation fund, I don't know when you were saying interest rates, are you saying what CIFA receives them at? We receive them. Okay, what we lend them at. We are lending them at concessional rates of around 5%, by the way. In certain cases, especially in the Small Business Innovation Fund, we also have a grant element as well. Because when we received the money from the fiscal, from the European Union, it was given to us as a grant. So we want to pass the benefits to the end beneficiary by making sure that we even go to an extent of saying, you as a partner together with us, you are limited to charge the entrepreneurs a maximum of X. And that is the only way that we can pass the benefit to those SMEs. I think the issue of the default, it is really shown through the numbers. Our numbers are high. I mean, for the financial year 18-19, our impairments were at 47%. We have got a target this financial year to make sure that we go to, you know, around 33-35%. The intention is to slide it down because the lesser the number is, you know, in default and impaired, the more cash that we are in a position and I think the issue of Mpumalanga, we are not part of that. The access points I have already mentioned on that page, the number of co-location and branches. And I will leave my colleague then to touch on the issue of Anglo-American and the issue of, you know, shades and ablution blocks and so on. Thank you.
Dear members, in terms of the Anglo-American fund and producer, this is obviously a joint venture with Transnet, an Anglo-American and Israeli part of the strategy that CIFA took part, that we are going to go into strategic partnerships. It's easier for us to really do funding. So this is an ESD program that we have with Transnet producer. We entered into an agreement where Transnet has put in approximately 60 million, CIFA put in 60 million, and Anglo also put in 60 million. We had obviously for the pilot, and we had certain issues at the beginning due to the size of Transnet as a company with various subsidiaries and also regional geographic spread. But we have managed to communicate to all the regions and all the subsidiaries. We've had many engagements, and the staff has visited almost all the regional offices just to discuss with the supply chain, because as I said, this is an ESG program where we are targeting suppliers on the Transnet supplier database, where they are engaging, obviously, where they have obtained PO or anything with Transnet, and CIFA has then come in to do the funding and purchase orders. So it has been successful, and we have managed to increase our funding. We have also managed to increase visibility within the Transnet board. And we also have a separate fund with Anglo. Again, this is a JV with CIFA and Anglo-American, Renele. And we've put in 100 million, and Anglo-American has also put in 100 million. And this was ready to fund early feasibility studies within the mining sector, where mostly black people have been empowered to do mining exploration feasibility studies within mining. And we have some success stories. The first fund, which was 200 million, was so successful that it was actually repaid. CIFA took a decision to fund the fund. We are in our second stage of funding. Unfortunately, with the second stage, it was just before the mining industry went into a lot of distress. So the fund is still doing better than most, considering it's in mining and considering it's going to the community studies and exploration, early stages of mining. But it is a fund that we are now reviewing on whether we can continue going forward. In terms of the support to SMEs and what are we doing in terms of provision of shades and acquisition toilets and other things, CIFA, through our properties, we have engaged local municipalities. In Cape Town, we have been very successful actually in creation of shades where they are your micro lenders and other hawkers that are around our properties. We've managed to actually put in infrastructure and we'll see tomorrow during our site visit some of the improvements that we've had, not just the SMEs that are within the property, but the SMEs that are outside. We've managed to really and make their living where they are now shaded. And it really is done again with partnerships. When we say we are doing a lot of partnerships with local economies, and we've done that also in Johannesburg, where we've done a lot of that was with the provincial government. We've done a lot of improvements on our properties, obviously in conjunction with the tenants. And we are continuing with the recapitalization that we've received from the state. There will be a portion that will be used for the full refurbishment of the properties, and we look at how do we improve further, not just the SMEs that are within the properties, but I think how we the properties themselves.
Sorry, it's now 1 o'clock, and we have a joint meeting this afternoon. So we'd like to allow members to have separate lunch before the joint sitting debate. And I'll just give the chair just 1 minute closing remarks. And then I know I was supposed together with Honorable Moiman and Honorable Masoud to be in a meeting that started at past 12. But I don't want to be unfair to CIFA. We invited them here to present, and but also that they were supposed to have started at 10, but because we had to deal with the national minimum wage amendment bill, so could not have put pressure on them. And so I think the people that are organizing the other meeting would have to apologize.
This one is program chair.
Yeah, this one is broken, and this is, yeah, it was a short notice, actually. There was no fair half past 12. I know that some members are really dedicating that stuff. So I'll give the chair just the 1 minute remarks.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. For us, it is just to express our sincere gratitude, the opportunity we've been given to interact with you, so, and the cordial manner with which we've been able to have engagement. Like I said before, we are forever open to engagement, whether you want to, whether via the company secretary, whichever way that you want to communicate with us, we are forever open. And where it's feasible for us, for instance, in your interaction with your constituencies, you want maybe even a resource to be there to clarify if you can. We can only see what we can do in terms of deployment of resources that are closest to you, especially for instance, because we're not necessarily going to respond to what we advance. So we humbly appreciate and perhaps wish you well also in our joint position to support you this afternoon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we'll take the also the of course the, we also have the constituencies, the individual members of parliament who will also invite you to come and address the communities. What is it that you offer for SMS? Just before you look, Honorable Bosop, I made a mistake here and said that next week we're meeting with CEDA. According to our program, we're supposed to meet with CEDA next week. But in the meeting of chairperson, it was indicated that there are about 4 provinces that are held in the state of the province addresses next week on Tuesday.
So therefore the meetings for next week are cancelled. The other challenge now that the following week we have a committee strategic planning session. So the only available date then will be the 10th of March. So we can only be able to meet with CEDA on the 10th of March. So I just wanted to indicate that that was the meeting. Then thank you very much.